Today's reading comes from Matthew chapter 13, verses 31 to 35. He told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and planted in his field. Though it is the smallest of all the seeds, yet when it grows, it is the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds can come and perch in its branches. He told them still another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed into about 30 kilograms of flour until it worked all through the dough. Jesus spoke all these things to the crowds in parables. He did not say anything to them without using a parable. So it was fulfilled what was spoken through the prophet. I will open my mouth in the parables. I will utter things hidden since the creation of the world. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Toby, and thank you, Paula, before that. So, we are going to be spending the next few weeks sinking ourselves into the world of the parables. And what I'd love us to invite us to do this evening is to imagine the early years of the Jesus movement. This morning we were speaking about a reset. That's the kind of title of our morning service sermon series. And I was just thinking about how electrical devices talk about like resetting to factory settings, a reset to factory settings. So I was thinking, what's like the factory settings of the Jesus movement? So let's think back to those early days when Jesus was slowly but surely acquiring a following in this area of Palestine. He's speaking and crowds are gathering. There are rumours rife about the healings that he performs, although he doesn't always want them advertised. There's an unusual bunch of people who are following him round, and people are starting to notice that the way that they relate to one another and to the Roman occupiers and to the authorities is starting to change somehow. Jesus is attracting curiosity and hostility as well as loyalty. There are no such things as church buildings, although there are synagogues, and Jesus and his followers would regularly go and worship at the synagogues. And there's huge unpredictability about the Jesus movement at the early stages, because there have been people acquiring this kind of following before, and some of them even within living memory. Some of these people have even claimed that they've been messiahs before now. So at this, there have been healers that have healed before. There have been Jewish uprisings against Roman occupation, and the communities still carry those scars of how those things have been brutally put down. So there's a big question. Will this movement, the Jesus movement, have any lasting significance? Can it last beyond the life of the first generation? Can it become mainstream? So gatherers of Jesus followers have this kind of air of risk and vulnerability. They're vulnerable because who knows what these crowds will become. And they're risky because they attract people who are ill, physically and spiritually and mentally. And they're also attracting the interests of powerful people who are curious about what's going on. So there's an occupying force. There is oppression. There's division based on economics, based on race, based on religion. There is misuse of power in big and small ways. There's sickness and disease and poverty. And there are weddings and parties and birthdays and friendships and family. People who love each other and are doing their best in the circumstances. So that's the Jesus movement and its first context. Imagine this Rabbi Jesus stepping into this context, the mix of the fragile and the vulnerable, the dangerous and the ordinary. He's speaking with authority and he's healing as he speaks. And more often than anything else, he's speaking about a kingdom. This is his announcement. The kingdom of God has come. So what does that kind of language do in your head, the language of a kingdom? To me, that is a grand language, and it speaks into the Hebrew scriptures, which speak of the power of a king who will overcome and will put things right that have gone wrong. There's an increase of expectation for me when I hear the language of kingship. And there are already kings and powers around this land. So Jesus is definitely talking about a reset. He's definitely talking about a change of management. So what this language of kingship does with your hopes and your expectations kind of depends on how close you are to the existing forms of power. And when people ask about this kingdom, Jesus often tells stories, as Toby's just read for us. Sometimes he goes through afternoons where he doesn't teach anything without telling a story about it. And sometimes that seems to increase the curiosity rather than necessarily clarify things. I read this thing recently that when Jesus told these stories, he wanted, rather than to just like point to a picture, a 2D picture of what the kingdom was like, it was like that he was inviting people into a house and inviting them to look around and inhabit something rather than just hearing about it from the outside. So that is the factory setting of the kingdom of God, of the Jesus movement, him wandering about Palestine, telling these stories. And I think of these days, the days that we are living through now, and the fact that much is changing for us too. We're having to make new decisions about the way that things are, the way that we do things. For many people, there's a sense that priorities have shifted. And when we look back to those early stages of the Jesus movement, we realize that followers of Jesus have got 2,000 years of practice in trying to live as citizens of a new kingdom, in a new way. One in which patterns of life are creative and generous and just and peaceful. So as we enter what people are calling a new normal, I think the parables of Jesus, as we enter into them and dwell in them and look around them, have got much to teach us about what it is to live a new normal, which is under Jesus's kingship. So here are two stories that we're going to start off with for us to enter into. From Matthew, I've lost the page, chapter 13, the parable of the mustard seed and the parable of the yeast. And I wonder for you, what do these two parables do to your understanding of kingship, to your hopes and your expectations about what kingship means? I'll just allow you to percolate that thought for a little while as I recall the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed which a man took and planted in his field. The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed into a large amount of flour. So to me, the two things I'd like us to... two things that God has spoken to me about this parable... these parables are that our hopes and expectations, I think, are increased on the one hand and also unsettled on another. An increased hope and a reset vision. So on the one hand, they're increased. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed which a man took and planted in his field. Though it's the smallest of all your seeds, yet when it grows, it's the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree. Oh, there's actually some pictures on a PowerPoint I'm now thinking. Oh, yeah, I couldn't see Olivia's head. Now I can. Thanks, Olivia. here are some mustard plants. So here's the truth. Mustard plants can become quite big, but the truth is they really become sort of large bushes rather than trees. A really big black mustard seed plant of the kind that Jesus might have been familiar with, a really big one might grow to like 7 or 8 feet. But it would really be sort of stems rather than a tree trunk. So when Jesus says a man takes a mustard seed and plants it in the field and it becomes a tree, he's really describing an extraordinary level of growth. If a mustard seed grew to the extent that birds could nest in its branches, the farmer who planted that mustard seed would be inviting his neighbours round to tell them, "This is crazy. Look at the growth of this mustard seed. Birds are nesting in its branches." This would really be something to write home about. This isn't quite the magic beanstalk story, but it's getting close. This is extraordinary growth. So now you're imagine you are hearing Jesus telling this story. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that becomes a tree. What would be your reaction? And I think we've got a choice to make. Because if you hear someone saying the mustard seed becomes a tree, the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed becoming a tree, you can either go, yeah, right. Come on, Jesus. A mustard seed that becomes a tree that birds can nest in. Forget it. I don't buy it. Or you can go, I don't know, I've not seen it before, but I'm in. I'm in for looking for it. I think Jesus provides us with an incredible picture of abundant growth that we then have to decide what we do with it. Will we be the cynical farmer sitting there and going, come on, mustard seed doesn't grow that big? Or will we be the person going, I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm willing to trust that it would come. So I think Jesus wanted to challenge people that you can have big hopes with this kingdom. This kingdom isn't a small deal. It's not even an average deal. It's a remarkably big deal, this kingdom of God. To coin another parable, it's the kind of kingdom that is worth selling everything and buying a field for, because it's like nothing you've seen before. It's something hospitable, generous, extraordinary. Birds of the air can nest in the branches of this mustard bush. My whole kind of thing that I would love us to do today is to have courage to pray big prayers. And this is one of my favourite stories about big prayers. It's about Dunkirk. Some of you will know this already. And this is, I'm quoting J. John. So you may know the story. In May 1940, there was the British forces were under incredible danger. The German and the Allied nations were predicting a slaughter, really, of British and Allied troops. The German high command was able to boast with confidence that its troops were proceeding to annihilate the British army. And then on the 23rd of May, King George VI. Called for a day of prayer on the following Sunday, on the 26th of May. Late on the Saturday evening, the military decision was taken to evacuate as many as possible of the Allied forces. On the Sunday, the nation devoted itself to prayer in an unprecedented way. Eyewitnesses and photographs confirm overflowing congregations in places of worship across the land. At the same day, an urgent request went out for boats of all sizes and shapes to cross the English Channel to rescue the besieged army, a call ultimately answered by around 800 vessels. So the nation that had nothing else to turn to fell to its knees. And these are a few things that happened in that week. In a decision that infuriated his generals and still baffles historians, Hitler ordered his army to halt. Had they continued to fight, the destruction of the Allied forces would have been inevitable, and the war would have taken a different, darker, and more terrible path. Yet for 3 days, the Germans' tanks and soldiers stood idle while the evacuation unfolded. Not only so, bad weather on the Tuesday grounded the Luftwaffe, the German Air Force, allowing the Allied soldiers to march to Dunkirk, to the beaches of Dunkirk, unhindered. In contrast, the following day, on Wednesday, the sea was extraordinarily calm, making the perilous evacuation less hazardous. By the time the German army was finally ordered to renew its attack, over 338,000 troops had been rescued from the beaches, including 140,000 French, Belgian, Dutch, and Polish soldiers. So Winston Churchill, who was not a man who was given to this sort of language, called it the miracle of Dunkirk. They prayed big prayers, and God did some extraordinary things. Of course, people can give all sorts of explanations to what went on in the miracle of Dunkirk, but I think we can look to a big God who answers big prayers. In another story, which for me fits into a kind of a seems unlikely category, but I'm willing to stand in the gap and say, yes, I want to claim this for more and more our churches. A friend of mine posted a picture on Twitter a couple of weeks ago of him baptizing two people by pouring water over their heads at a distance outside his church in Newcastle. One had come to faith through watching services online. And he'd come to faith and come to the church as soon as it opened and said, I think I'm a Christian. What do I do now? The following week, he brought his next door neighbour, and the two of them were baptised that week. online church bringing people to Jesus? It seems unlikely, but can we trust what is unlikely, what is extraordinarily generous? I believe Jesus wants to expand our hopes. So, the kingdom of heaven is like yeast that's mixed with, there are different translations, but the translation I was looking at said yeast that's mixed with 3 measures of flour. Now, probably none of us being Palestinian women who have a job to make bread know what 3 measures of flour is like. But it's significant that Jesus makes an analogy that Palestinian women without the money to have servants making their bread for them would recognize. 3 measures of flour is an absurd amount of bread. 100 loaves worth of bread would be made out of 3 measures of flour. And this is a hospitable amount of bread. One commentator says that the woman could be catering for a party or a wedding feast if she mixes yeast into 3 measures of flour. This is a woman needing an expectation of a party, expectation of a feast. Is it possible that the kingdom of God can feed the needs of your family, your friends, your neighborhood, this country? Is it possible that the kingdom of God can do more than we can ask or imagine? I believe Jesus is asking our hopes to be expanded. Is our vision of the kingdom big enough? Are we praying as though the kingdom of God can increase in our day, even amidst all these crazy restrictions? Let us enlarge our hopes for this kingdom to come here in Peckham, to come in our neighbourhoods, to come in our workplaces, to come in the schools and the universities near us. So Jesus told a couple of stories that farmers and women who need bread might recognise as having an extraordinary level of hospitality and abundance contained in them. What about your workplace or your home or your neighbourhood? What would be a ridiculously large image for Jesus to use of your setting? If Jesus was setting a parable in a school, he might say, "The kingdom of heaven is like a teacher who goes to an assembly of 1,000 pupils, and every one of them achieves just what they can achieve." If Jesus was setting in a parable in a hospital, he might say, "The kingdom of heaven is like a nurse in a ward that is full of patients. The nurse goes in at night, and by morning, each one of the patients is dancing." What about your setting? What's the ridiculously large image that Jesus might use in your setting to increase your hopes and your expectations of what he could do? What's your really big, hospitable, generous prayer? So hopes are increased by these parables, I believe. But also their expectations are unsettled and reset. Because Jesus doesn't say the kingdom of heaven is like an enormous tree. He says it's like a man planting a seed in a field. He doesn't say the kingdom of heaven is like a groaning table full of delicious bread. He says it's like a woman kneading bread into yeast. So if our hopes are increased, I think they're also unsettled. Going back to those people listening to Jesus the first time when he told these stories, they could be, people could say, "We're talking, this is your kingdom, a seed, a yeast. We've already got those things and the Romans are still occupying us. We've already got those things and our grandparents are still at risk. We've already got these things and we still can't pay the taxes that the Roman authorities are calling on us. These are so ordinary. These are so small. Call that a kingdom." And both of these things call on something from the person who is doing the kneading or doing the planting. Taking, planting, waiting and trusting. Taking, kneading, waiting and trusting. Speaking of one of the many lockdown sourdough bakers, I can tell you that kneading 100 loaves of bread is a significant commitment. Kneading one loaf of bread is a fair commitment. If you're catering for a wedding, you'd probably invite your family and friends over to help knead your 100 loaves of bread as well. as our hopes are increased of what God can do, so we're unsettled to recognise that he invites us into the work as well. I've really found God speaking to me about these two parables, about us, his church, in this season, the Jesus movement in this season. What does it take for us, those of us that follow Jesus, to put ourselves into the hands of God and allow ourselves to be kneaded in to our community, for church to be less about event and more about presence, by which I mean the presence of God dwelling in his people, the presence of God in which we marinate and sit by daily patterns of intimacy, but also the presence of God's yeasty people in the world? What if church was less about big and more about unbreakable? Picture a mustard seed and picture a beach ball and imagine an elephant stepping on each one of them. Which one of them is more likely to break? There's power in being small. And I wonder if there's something that for us to take hold of in this season. I wonder if church in the moment, but in this season, might be less about kind of an abstract church family. I love my church. And more about, I love this person and that person and this person who I'm getting to know better and who are getting to know me better. Reaching beyond boundaries, but committing to relationship. I might sound as though I'm kind of making a proposal for what church looks like in this season, but the truth is I don't really know what. But I believe that God is asking something of us as the Jesus movement in the 21st century. This could be a time when we just mark time until church feels normal again. Or we can use this time to seek him on our knees and ask him to enlarge our vision. So over these coming 6 weeks, we're going to be spending time in this evening service with six parables of the kingdom, which reflect the six values of the 24/7 prayer movement, which personally I find really inspiring. Their Lectio 365 app has been a great resource for me personally. And I think these six values are really resonant for us as a community. The six values are prayer and creativity, hospitality and justice, learning and mission. And they're reflected in the rule of life of the order of the mustard seed, which is allied to the 24/7 prayer movement. And in exploring these themes, I hope that we can all have a chance to think about rules of life for us, both personal and communal. I think if God is calling us to be a yeasty people, kneaded well into our community, we also need to think about what does that mean for our personal patterns of intimacy with the Father in prayer and in creativity? What does it mean for us to expect grandly of God in his hospitality and take action for his justice? Learning looks like us investing in going into the houses, the houses that Jesus invites us into when he tells parables, and looking around them and exploring them for ourselves. Mission looks like being kneaded in to our communities. A yeasty community by which a whole city rises. So I offer these to you, really. And as I say, I sound like I've got sort of a proposal for what's now for church. But my proposal is, let's seek God. Let's seek God for what he's doing in us now. Let's seek God for his reset, for his new thing. Let's enter into the pictures that Jesus gives us of the kingdom and ask him to raise our expectations and to unsettle our vision, to unsettle our vision so that it fits more with his vision. So here's how we're going to respond. I'm going to ask Jonathan to come and play for us. And as he does so, I'm going to invite us to pray big prayers. Some of you will have grabbed a pen and a piece of paper as you came in. And I deliberately brought Sharpies because when I want to write something really bold, I find that a Sharpie really helps. So if you've got a Sharpie, take the boldness of the Sharpie, but more importantly, the boldness of the kingdom of God. And what's your big prayer? What's the big, absurd, hospitable prayer that you would pray for the church and for your community at the moment? And I invite you to write it down and maybe fold it up so it becomes like a seed and come and leave it at the foot of the cross. What's the big prayer that God is inviting us to pray? Let's take the opportunity to allow him to expand our vision.